Before we actually begin, let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. And let's place what we're about to do, sharing the Dharma together this evening. Let's place this very much within the context of being of service to all living beings. And so by hearing the Dharma, we identify our own afflictions and learn the antidotes to them. And through this, through the learning and practicing the Dharma, may we progress along the path to full enlightenment. Because our deepest wish is to be of great service, meaningful service to Mother Sentient Beings. And we'll have the skills and compassion and wisdom necessary to do that every day. And so for that reason, we aim for Buddha. Cultivate that motivation of caring about other living beings and wanting to benefit them through using the Dharma, and therefore aiming for enlightenment. Something about delight and disappointment. And I don't know if it's part of the subtitle or if I just put this in, but to me that means the topic is the eight worldly concerns. Was that part of the subtitle at all? Does anybody know? Oh, you've all forgotten. So the eight worldly concerns is a very particular concern that's found in, you know, both the Pali Canon and the Chinese and the Tibetan Canon. And it talks about eight feelings or eight activities that keep us spinning around in the world. Okay, so there are eight worldly concerns. And we spin around and around based on them. I first learned this topic, okay, speaking about this actually, the introduction, I first learned this topic at the same year, in the same place, that I first met Yangtze Rinpoche. Because I've known Rinpoche since he was this big. Yeah, it was actually possible that one day he was this big. Okay, so this was back in 1975 at Kopan Monastery. And so he was a young monk there, and I was among these kind of hippie people who kind of stumbled up the hill, you know, because Kopan was on top of the hill, and it was outside of Kathmandu, outside of a little town called Boda, which was outside of Kathmandu. And Kathmandu was Freak Street, okay, so called because all of the Western freaks or hippies went there. Okay, that was the big drug dealing area. Yeah, and then they also had a few cookies and things like that. You know, I first went there in 1973, actually. And, you know, after you travel overland, we traveled overland from Turkey through, we went Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Nepal. So, you know, saw the big Bamiyan Buddhas that the Taliban, you know, exploded. Anyway, you know, got to Kathmandu, and they had a few cookies there, which were like really special after all this time of traveling. And once in a while, you indulged and you had a hot shower, and that was like the peak of samsara pleasure. And then, you know, after you explored Freak Street and the pleasures it had to offer, you know, then the next thing was to go up the hill to Kopan Monastery and hear something about Buddhism from these exotic Tibetan lamas. And Lama Yeshe was alive in those days, and he would always greet us very friendly and very warm, and he had this particular talent for helping us laugh at ourselves. And then Lama Zopa would be the one who really gave it to us. And so here we all are. The first year I arrived at Kopan, I had hair down to here, big wavy hair, my peasant, broidered in peasant blouse, okay, and then this long skirt of bright Indian fabric. I just had my ears pierced, so I had big earrings, you know, and I thought it was really hot stuff. And, you know, we all kind of stumbled up the hill in our stupor, you know, and then went to listen to Buddhist teachings. And Lama Zopa would teach the eight worldly concerns. And he used to call it the evil thought of the eight worldly concerns, attachment to the happiness of this life. And we're all gone. But Rinpoche, really, a hot shower is so nice when you've been on the road. What's wrong with a hot shower? You know? And with these cookies. You know? And the latest hash. And this trekking trip that we've always wanted to go on, you know? And look, with all of our Nepali things that we got, our special stuff that, you know, we're going to take back home. So I remember the first time I was there, didn't know anything about Buddhism, but I liked these rice prints of the various deities, and I got a bunch of them, not because I had any knowledge or faith, okay, but because I wanted to have far-out-looking things in my flat back in the U.S., so when my friends came, they would say, where did you get those far-out-looking things? And I could say, well, I've been to Nepal and traveled across Asia. And then they would all go, wow. Yeah, I don't know anybody else who's done that. You must be special. And then I just go, and do you want to see my photographs? Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay, so. Yeah, we were quite a scene. Okay, so we would go up there, and Rinpoche just would hit us with this teaching on the eight worldly concerns. And he wouldn't just teach it once, because I think he knew how dense we were. And he would often spend most of the month-long Kopan course talking about the eight worldly concerns. Okay, so I got it hammered into me really well. Okay, he talked about eight worldly concerns during the day, and then when we had precepts in the morning, because we did the eight Mahayana precepts every day for 2 weeks, where we only ate one meal a day. Yeah, and so it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, pitch black, in this tent with all the fleas, and, you know, we're kneeling down, and then Rinpoche decides to add some more to his motivation. You know, so a couple of hours later, after you've been kneeling in this position for quite a while, and he would be explaining the disadvantages of cyclic existence. You know, so this was the kind of crowd we were, you know, that in the the early dawn, we got the disadvantages and the sufferings of psychic existence, and during the day, we got the evil thought of the eight worldly concerns. But, you know, a couple of years ago, I saw Rinpoche, and I went and I, this is Zopa Rinpoche, and I thanked him for teaching us all like this, because it was a hard teaching to hear, but it was very precious, and I think it really got me going on the right foot in the Dharma practice. And I see now that a lot of times teachers don't talk about these topics because the Western audience doesn't like it. You know, we don't want to hear about suffering. Yeah. We want to hear about light and love and bliss and, you know, these kinds of things. But we got it kind of really straight and clear in the early days. And I'm extremely grateful for it. So let me go through these eight, okay? These eight precious gems. I'll just outline them, and then I'll go back and explain them a little bit more. Okay, they fall in four pairs, okay? And actually, if you're familiar with the Lam Rim, they come in the teaching on impermanence and death, when they talk about the advantages of remembering death and the disadvantages of not remembering it. So this is in the first scope, the initial, the practice in common with the initial scope of things. And the meaning here is that if you don't remember impermanence and death, then you live your life completely wrapped up in these eight. Okay, so these eight fall in four pairs. So the first pair has to do with money and material possessions. So it's being delighted when you get money and material possessions. Yeah, right? We all are? Yeah. And being disappointed or feeling dejected if we didn't get what we want, or if it got stolen, or if it breaks. Okay, you have this experience in your life? Mm-hmm. Then the second one is feeling delighted when people approve of us, when they praise us, when they say nice words, you're so wonderful, you're so good looking, I can't live without you, we really perk up. It's like, we love nice words like that, okay? So feeling very delighted at nice words. And then the other part of that pair is feeling dejected when we don't hear the nice words that we've been wanting to hear, or when we get the opposite, when people disapprove of us, when they blame us, when they criticize us. Normal, right? Then, third pair is feeling delighted when we have a good reputation and a good image, which we all want. And feeling upset, you know, disappointed when we have a bad image and a bad reputation. And then the fourth pair is feeling delighted when we meet pleasant sense objects, you know, beautiful things to see and nice music and nice odors and good food and nice tactile sensations. And feeling dejected or disappointed when we get very unpleasant sensual, you know, contact. So those are the eight. They sound completely normal, don't they? Yeah? Wouldn't you say the vast majority of your life is spent trying to get four and get rid of the other four? Wouldn't you say that, I mean, in all honesty? Yeah. I mean, what do we think about when we first wake up in the morning? Oh, awful sound of the alarm clock. Okay? So that's the last one. Yeah? Dislike of bad objects of hearing. Okay. Then, I don't want to get up. This bed is so warm and comfortable. So that's also the fourth pair, except that's on the delight side. You know, the tactile object of the nice soft bed. then it's, oh, but I can have a cup of coffee somewhere out there. Okay, maybe getting out of bed is doable now. So then, you know, that's also that fourth care, you know, except here we're projecting in the future, you know, the delight, the good feelings we're going to get from that cup of coffee. How should you get out of bed? And then you think about the day in front of you. Oh, I have to go to work with my boss, who is so uncooperative and blames me for everything that goes wrong. Okay, so that's the second one, you know, dislike of getting blamed. But after work, oh, you meet this really good-looking guy. Yeah. And he says nice things to me. Ooh, and he gives me presents. And he says, I love you. You know, so what do we have there? Then we have the first one, you know, attachment to material possessions, because he's going to give me presents, and the attachment to being approved and nice sweet words. Okay. But then I meet him and we have a quarrel, and so then I get the disappointment from the unpleasant words that he's saying to me. Yeah. And so, you know, the whole life is kind of going on like this. Yeah, wanting the, you know, four and wanting to get away from the other four. And this is what we call living. Yeah? I've also heard it described as struggling for pleasure. And it is a struggle, isn't it? It's a struggle. Because these whole eight are based on the view that our happiness and our suffering comes from outside of us. So if I get money and material things, if I get people tell me how wonderful I am and praise me, if I have a good reputation, if I have nice things to eat and I hear nice music and a good sex life and all this stuff, then I'm happy. But then if I get the opposite of it, if the stock market goes down and, you know, and I lose money and then I have to hear the music that either my parents or my kids play, or people criticize me and blame me, or they talk about me behind my back and I have a bad reputation, then I'm totally unhappy and miserable. So Lama Yeshe had this expression, yo-yo mind. Okay? This is where it came from. Yeah? We meet the things we like and the yo-yos up, and we meet the things we don't like and the yo-yos down. So we're always going up and down, up and down, up and down. And the whole thing is based on this view that happiness and suffering come from outside. So then the purpose of our life becomes, how do I arrange my life so I can be only near everything that I like through the first four? And how can I arrange my life so I don't have to have anything to do with the other four? That becomes the purpose of our life, because we're fairly convinced that happiness and suffering come from outside. And with that worldview, you know, what happens? Well, we try and arrange the world, and the world doesn't cooperate. Does it? Yeah, we've been trying to arrange the world our whole life, so we're only around the things we like and are free from, you know, everything we don't like. And we've never succeeded yet in doing it. But we keep trying. We keep trying because we're firmly convinced that happiness and suffering are dependent on the external objects, that they bring us happiness, they bring us misery. And so our whole life becomes kind of a rat race that way, doesn't it? And, you know, just when we think, okay, now I've kind of got it pretty well set up, where I'm really with everything that I like, then something we like goes sour. We thought we had just gotten it, and then it goes sadder. So this thing that we thought was going to bring us happiness, that we worked so hard to get, it now brings us problems. You ever had that happen in your life?
No.
You know, if you have a computer, I guarantee you understand it. Yeah? Computers are an excellent example. You know, you get your new computer, it has all the latest whatever things, you know, and you're firmly convinced it's going to be the thing that really makes your life so much easier now that you have this computer. You transfer all your data on it, and then it takes a vacation. Yeah? And it says, well, I'm under warranty, you can just have me fixed. Right. Okay. And so here we go, you know, from elation, having this wonderful new computer, to total dejection when everything got lost. You know? To elation when we meet Prince Charming. Yeah, he finally turned up on his white horse after we've been waiting so long. Yeah, and he's wonderful, and now our life is going to be, we're going to live ever last, you know, we live happily ever after. And then it doesn't work out, and we crash. Or we're working for this wonderful good reputation. You finally kind of climbed up the corporate ladder, or, you know, whatever your field was, you kind of got something good, and then you make a mistake, and everybody sees it. So always up and down, you know, we get a lot of money, and then the stock market crashes. So up and down, up and down, up and down. And where does it leave us at the end of the day? Yeah? This kind of life of, that's so involved in the eight worldly concerns. Where do we get at the end of the day? Yeah? So we live our whole life for this. And then at the time when we're dying, okay, when we're on our deathbed, the money and material possessions, do they come with? No, they stay here and all of our relatives fight over. Okay? The praise, all the praise and approval that we wanted, does it come with? Well, you might think, well, when I die, then at the memorial service, they'll say all these nice things about me, you know? And they'll finally appreciate me. Yeah, you know, when I'm dead, all these people who criticized me for so long, they're going to miss me so much. And then at my memorial service, they're going to say such nice, wonderful words. But you know what? We're not going to be around again. Yeah? And when we die, they might be saying nice words, but what good do the nice words hear us? When we're in the bardo, when we're in our next life, what good do all the nice words about this life do for us? Nothing. Okay? But then we think, well, it's not just nice words for a few people. I'm going to be famous. Then when they have my memorial service, it'll be written up in the newspaper, there'll be a nice program with my artwork and my poetry, and, you know, I'm involved in so many things, all these people will miss me, and I just have such a good reputation, and they'll finally see how much I did for them and contributed at work, and, you know, or whatever political power we have, or, you know, whatever it is. But again, when we die, does any of that come with us? Nothing. Nothing. Our power is gone. You know, our reputation is gone. None of that makes any difference when you die. And then the last ones about, you know, the nice sense pleasures, do we take those with us when we die? No, they don't come with either. You know, everything of this life stays here, and our consciousness goes on into the next life. Okay? But we spent this whole life involved in the eight worldly concerns, in this push-pull, push-pull, gimme, get me away, gimme, get me away. You know? And at light and at death time, it's all gone. But what comes with us is the karma we created trying to get four of them and trying to get away from the other four. Okay? Because we've done a lot of actions to try and get the things that we want. When there's money and material possessions and we want them, are we totally honest on our income taxes? Maybe I better not ask that question. Yeah? Okay, so we might create some karma of stealing or karma of lying in order to get the money and the material possessions. To get the praise and stay away from the blame. We might often lie. We present ourselves in one way so that people will praise us and approve of us. We cover up our mistakes. We have a lot of pretension and present these good qualities that we don't really have, but we're pretending because we want people to like us and approve of us and say nice things to us. Okay, so all that karma from that deception comes with us. For our reputation, boy, what people do to protect their reputation. I mean, just read in the newspaper. Isn't it amazing, you know, what the politicians and CEOs are doing for reputation? There's something good that happens, oh, well, it's my credit. There's something bad that happens, it's somebody else's fault. Okay? So a lot of lies, a lot of harsh words, a lot of disharmonious speech, a lot of gossip, all that karma comes with when we die. But the reputation vanishes. And also with all the nice sensory things that we want. Yeah. When we go out to eat and we order dinner and it doesn't taste so good, what do? Yeah. Starts with a C, it's my favorite hobby. Complain. You got it. Okay? We complain. And we call the waiter or waitress over, oh, this food is terrible and you're charging for this and take it back to the chef. And, you know, we make a whole ruckus in the restaurant because of some unpleasant taste. Mm-hmm. So we create all sorts of karma, you know, from different mental, physical, verbal actions in response to these eight. When we die, these eight all stay here, but all that karma comes with us. And that karma influences what we become in a future life. It influences what we encounter, yeah, the kind of habits that we have. The karma is incredibly important in determining if we're happy or miserable in a future life. But not having understood that, this life, we very freely created all sorts of horrendous karma in order to get forth the eight worldly concerns and separate from the other four. Okay. So the conclusion is we got cheated. We got cheated. Yeah. This worldview that happiness and suffering are outside, it cheated us. It made us spend our whole life trying to rearrange the world to be happy. And at the end, it left us with absolutely nothing. So we got cheated. And even if we look at these eight worldly concerns, you know, we can see that four of them are definitely unhappy. But if we look closely, the mind that is trying to get and trying to get away from, that mind is not a peaceful, content, happy mind. So the mind, even that feels delighted when we get money and material things, you know, you get a new birthday present, yeah, Christmas present, you get some new thing, and you say, I'm going to be kind to myself, so you go out to the shopping center and buy another thing that you don't need, yeah, to give yourself a present. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you feel very good about this new thing you bought at the shopping center until you get your credit card bill at the end of the month. And then you realize that you're way overcharged on your credit card. Now, does the happiness you get from this new thing you got that you don't need, how does that compare with the tension and misery from being in credit card debt? Was it worth it? Probably not. But when we look at our credit card debt and we feel really unhappy, should it make us feel better? We go to the shopping center and buy another thing. Hmm? Don't we? This is the American way of life. It is called being a good citizen and working for the good economy. Isn't it? Yeah? And look how much we're brainwashed by it. Look how much we believe it. You feel depressed, just go out and buy something. Yeah? And do you remember after 9/11 what we were instructed to do to be good citizens? Do you remember? We were supposed to go shopping. We were supposed to hate Al-Qaeda and then go shopping. That was the leadership we received. Okay? And we did it. We followed it. Yeah, we hated Al-Qaeda and we went shopping. Are we stupid? Maybe a little. Yeah?